I met the grandson. Grandson's real young, probably early mid 20s. I haven't, like I said, he's put in different addresses. Nobody responds back, so I don't know how good this support's really gonna be.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, sir. Before we get started, what is your name?
My name is Robert Stewart.
Okay, Mr. Stewart. If you could just hold on, the Honorable Mr. Johnson is going to conduct your hearing very shortly, so just hang on to the phone. And the next one you hear will be the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, sir.
Good morning, sir. How are you this morning?
Good, thank you.
Sir, could we, you're standing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, sir. Could you please state your full name and your ADC number for us for the record?
Robert Stewart, 3183.
All right, Mr. Stewart, I'm going to go with some information with you, sir. If any of the information is wrong or maybe incorrect or something you feel like correcting me, feel free to do so, okay?
All right.
So you're appearing before this board for a royal parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. Is that your understanding?
Yes, sir.
I didn't see an institutional progress report in your file, so can you tell me, sir, what's your plans if you were actually released, if you had the opportunity to be released on home arrest, or what would your plans be, sir?
Well,
I'd go
live with my brother, Felix. I don't know whether you remember, my brother normally shows up at these meetings. Unfortunately, I was told at the party a week ago that I was going to have a hearing. Normally, I'd be scheduled every 6 months for him, which would have been in December. So I was prepared in December to have my hearing, but for some reason, wasn't given my hearing. So I didn't know when I was going to have a hearing. And a week ago, I was informed that my hearing was going to take place today. You don't have a packet for me, which would show some of the stuff that I've been doing throughout the years, progress reports, and letters from professionals who have been a part of my treatment process, which I think were significant. Nor is my brother aware that my hearing's today. But I would be living with him in North Phoenix, and I would find employment. I'd live in a travel, give him a job. I'd work in daycare if I had to until I got a significant job established. And I would take part in further maintenance or treatment or whatever the board thought was appropriate for me to be involved in. And of course, if my parole officer stressed that I participated in any programs, I wouldn't have any resistance to that at all.
So, Mr. Stewart, I don't have that. I do have your information, the programs that you've taken, classes you've taken, your packages, certificates, and things that you have in here, and any letters that you have in there. We do have that from your last file, okay, sir?
Oh, okay. All right, thank you.
So, Mr. Stewart, you're what, 66 years old now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you really have a minimal amount of tickets that you received since you've been in custody, is that right? I mean, it looks like the entire time that you've been in there, you've only received 2 majors and 3 minors. That's a pretty good record for being incarcerated. Is that right?
Yeah, I think my last disciplinary was 5,026 days ago.
Yeah, you keep on with those days, huh? It looks like it's after one that you're talking about that was in '05, March of '05. How long ago was that?
That was 5,026 days ago.
Okay. So you've been out on parole. You were granted parole in 1986, and then you were revoked in 1993. What? Do you remember why? Why were you revoked back then, sir?
I was granted parole in 1986, but I didn't. I had to litigate it because a government de facto company was revoked, and so in the week I was. The court ruled with my favor, and I was released. And I was out for 4.5 years, and I was arrested for misdemeanor domestic violence. And I was reincarcerated.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong in reading the documentation. It looks like in 86 the board granted you parole, and then they wanted to rescind it. However, after you had received your letter and notification that you were going to be granted parole, you took it to court, and the court ruled in your favor. And then they had to, they held a hearing when the one wanted to rescind it, and they denied it. But you appealed that, and the court ruled in your favor and granted, said that they had to grant you parole unless you did something that violated or to be revoked. Is that right? Is that about right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So in 2002, you were granted parole again, and then you were revoked after 2 years in 2004. Why? What happened then, sir?
I was revoked for a condition 4 and condition 5, which condition 4 was that I participate in programming, you know, like counseling or whatever, and condition 5 was that I abide by our laws, tribunal, state, federal, and that I not engage in any assaultive behavior. And in July of 2004, I worked at this, actually I've been working at a produce company, delivering produce throughout Phoenix and Scottsdale. And I worked there, and my parole officer told me that I had to quit there and work at this other place called Budget Suite. For 4 months I had been working at Peddler's, and then I was forced to go to this other place and work at this Budget Suite. And that started in June, and in July, while working at this apartment complex where we would go in and sweep the parking lots, and there was a girl that was carrying a garbage box, and I was supervising two guys that spoke Spanish, and one of the guys went over to help her with the box, the garbage. And at the time that he was walking towards her, he asked me in Spanish to ask her how much the rent was. And so I did, and she came over to my truck, and we engaged in conversation that lasted maybe 20 or 30 minutes. And during that conversation, because she said that she was new to the community from Chicago, and her and her boyfriend were doing a lot of sightseeing, I told her about this brochure that I had from the World Chamber of Congress that outlined all these different places that you could go to, and that I'd be willing to give to her so that they could check out some of these places. And so she said, that would be nice. So that Friday evening, I put the brochure in my truck, and I went to see my daughter, and then I went to Burlington's. And from there, I was right there in that area, so I swung by there to take her that brochure, and I went to knock at her door, and nobody answered. I left there, and 2 days later, I was, again, visiting my daughter, and I swung by there to see if I saw her, I'd give her the brochure. If I didn't, I'd just throw it in the company truck, and when I saw her as I worked at the facility, I'd give it to her. And so that's what I did. And this was the 10th and the 7th of July of 2012, and on the 27th, I was called to my parole officer, parole office, and I was told that I was stalking this girl, and that she feared me, and they found me on the internet, and that at that point, my parole officer, well, the supervisor, Mr. Sturley, was going to put me on home arrest. And my parole officer, Mr. Steve Butcher, talked him into violating me. So he told me I would go back for a couple of years, and that if they would have the problem with me coming back after a couple of years, but because I took the fear of God into this person, I had to suffer consequences just like she did. But there's people out there who didn't want me out there because I was, but they threw me.
So, Mr.
So I was violated.
So, okay, alright. So, Mr. Stewart, the crime that you currently in there, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just trying to go briefly through some of the information, but you're in there for a sexual assault or a rape, and this happened back in 1972. In the early morning hours when the victim's husband had departed the house and moved to work to the airport, then you went and knocked on the victim's door, and the victim opened the door, so you then forced yourself inside of the house. When the victim opened the door, first telling her that you wanted to use the phone, and then you wind up sexually assaulting her, and she had a little kid in the house at the same time as she was in the house, and you went and drank some water, you were having the shakes, and you told her that you wanted to, that if she would let you make love to her, that you would just leave, and they found the prints on the glass. Then, you know, she said that you would calm down sometime, then you'd get excited, and you told her that you were going to kill her. She didn't go to bed with you. She told you she was on her period. You told her to take out, to remove her Tampax, and she did that, and then you sexually assaulted her in the house, and then you, after you did that, you put on your clothes and you left the house. So, you know, is that similar to what happened, sir?
What do you mean similar to what happened?
Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what happened 46 years ago.
Okay, so when you were released on parole, and here's why I'm having a problem, sir. When you were released on parole, you went and knocked on another lady's door to say that you were going to hand her a pamphlet. Why wouldn't you think that would be of harm, that your behavior would still be the same? Because that's the same thing that happened when this lady was sexually assaulted. You knocked on the door, someone opened the door, you forced your way inside of the house, and you committed a sexual assault. And then, you know, you are knocking on another strange woman's door who you don't know. And the fact that she did open the door, you weren't able to get in the house. So don't you think that behavior is a threat to the community, sir?
Well, I can see how it could give that appearance. But however, there are some distinctions. Number one, I had already had a previous conversation with her, so I knew who she was. Number two, she had told me where she stayed. Number three, I didn't have any assaultive behavior. And I just would like to reiterate to the board that, I went out on furloughs from 1980 to 1986 without ever having any incident or any assaultive behavior whatsoever. I got to schools throughout the state of Arizona, from Tombstone to White River, talking to kids, schools, I went into all these communities, into elementary schools, into colleges, into high schools, clubs throughout all the greater Tucson, Phoenix area. There are articles that have been written about me in the Arizona Republic and Daily Star as to what I was doing, going out and talking to these schools. And, you know, all this, those were things that I have done out in the community that, I'm not a threat anymore. When you look at the past, you now move back to 46 years, yes, that person was a threat, but at this time, if you take the measuring stick of this time, and even if you look back there and weigh it just with a sense of justice, with the things that I've done lately, having nobody has gone through as many years of treatment as I've gone through. What I did was heinous and wrong. I'm not the same person. As a matter of fact, 20 years old, that brain was not even fully developed. I can understand there being this concern that, sex offenders are being released into the community and you've got to watch them because they're looking over the wires. But this is one that has gone through treatment that has addressed the issues of going to prison. I've never done that before. I've never invested in trying to find out why is it that, my thinking is so distorted until I, took the time to invest in treatment. So there's letters there that you people have that have talked about. The Static 99 was a professional measuring stick for assessing the risk assessment of people. This is done by a professional that is employed by the Department of Corrections that gave me that test and measured that, and I have zero low risk. If you look at it from now, at this time, that there's a reasonable probability that I will not violate the law, then I'm asking for that opportunity. You guys can continue denying me every time you see me. You can continue bringing up the past to make it easier for you to make that judgment to deny me parole. But I'm not that 20-year-old kid. I'm a 66-year-old man. And, I've got letters from professionals in the field of sex offender treatment who talk about my growth and where I'm at to do. One of the things when I look back the decision I made to have any conversation whatsoever with a female stranger was a lapse in judgment. And now that I am able to look at all these situations that could arise and how I respond to them and the alternatives that I have, I never had that kind of thinking before. I'm not that same person. So I would hope that you, when you make those judgments against me, I did those things, and I'm heartily sorry for the pain and suffering that I've caused other people and my family. But I've invested. I'm sincerely, with all my open heart, and God is my witness, have worked at changing my behavior and addressing the stuff that. The thinking that brought me here in the first place. In relation to 14 and a half years ago, I'm not the same individual. I have never invested in treatment or thinking that all I had to do was the time of, doing time in prison was enough. That would make the difference. But it wasn't enough. to look at where my trailers are, and think about what was happening prior to those trailers, what was going on. And so I do a lot of thought by thought where
Mr. Stewart,
I think about things.
Mr. Stewart, so you didn't take any sex offense classes until 2016 and 18, is that right?
No, I've been involved in the sex offender treatment program since 2006.
Okay.
If you look at those letters, there's 11 letters that date back to 2006.
Okay.
From Dr. Arnold, Dr. Unruh, Ms. Sullivan, Dr. Dillon.
Okay.
We start from 2006 and up to present 2018 letter, the most recent from Dr. Dillon.
All right, let me see if the board has any additional questions for you, sir. There are no additional questions coming from the board, sir. The board is about to go into discussion. While we're in discussion, Mr. Stewart, we will make a decision whether to revoke or reinstate your community supervision. So, is there anything else you'd like to say to the board, sir, before we go into discussion?
Well, I just hope that you take a little time to be impartial, give me a fair hearing based on what I've done today at this time. At this time, using the measurestick of all those letters, now I'm kind of under the impression that those letters haven't even been looked at. If you're thinking that I've only been involved in treatment since 2016, because those letters go all the way back to 2006. So I believe I'm a great candidate for at the minimum home arrest. And that's, there's nothing I can say that's going to counter all the reasons of denial in the past, the serious nature of the offense, the trauma to the victim, I can't change any of that. Those are life-changing factors. And so, I mean, if that's going to be the reasons for denial, then there's really nothing that I can say, there's really nothing that I can do. I continue to stay in the treatment environment, I continue to facilitate and help other guys to address their offending behavior, and I think I would be an asset in the community. I'm also a published writer and an artist.
Okay. All right, Mr. Stewart, I do want to just say that it does show into your records that you had sex offender treatment in 06, 08, and 09, and then I guess you took it again in 16 and 18. Okay?
In
13,
yes.
All right, so the board is going to go into discussion, as I said before. I'm going to ask you to stay on the phone while the board is in discussion. While the board is in discussion, we will make a determination whether to revoke or reinstate. And we'll get back with you at that time, but I want you to stay on the phone so you can hear the discussion taking place, okay?
Okay.
All right. The board is now into discussion. We've had Mr. Stewart come before us. I think maybe we've all met her before. He has taken quite a bit of classes and quite a bit of programming since he's been incarcerated. He has taken the sex offender classes that he had. His last time that he was out, he had his parole revoked. It involved him going knocking on the door of another female. She actually, I believe, if I recall right, had to call the neighbor next door to have him leave the actual apartment. Then he came back over there another time. His vehicle and things were seen over there. I'm telling you, and when I asked him this time to tell that story about what happened, he tells it as a perfectly innocent story, but that he knew he was trying to take some paperwork over there to her, but I'm just having a problem with his attitude toward that last time that he was out, and that I think he may have relapsed, and that he still feels that that was a basic common thing to do. I'm just not comfortable with releasing him out back on home arrest or regular parole or absolute discharge at this time. I just think that, you know, he has to deal with that issue that he has, that, you know, he's doing the same thing. He's knocking on someone's door, a strange number who he do not know, and going in there and, you know, put a person in there. Once he saw that she was unwanted, he still hung around and stayed in the area. I think that, you know, based on that information, I'm just not sure that he wouldn't reoffend if he was released. That's my opinion. However, I am willing to listen to the rest of the colleagues. Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I just want to add that I'm concerned about Mr. Stewart's sense of entitlement and scrutiny of the board, considering that he had passed supervised release revocations at the ages of 41 and 53. He made much commentary about his development and how he was underdeveloped at the time of the crime, but he's been given two opportunities under supervised release at very mature ages. Thank you, sir.
Yes. Ms. Reynolds.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I remember Mr. Stewart's story from last time, and the story he tells this time is, unlike happens sometimes in these hearings, it is the same story that he told last time. But I'm just concerned about his judgment. I mean, in doing something like that, when it's so close to what the original crime was. Thank you.
I hear no other questions coming from the board. I'm going to move to deny Mr. Stewart home arrest, absolute discharge of regular parole. This incident occurred in 1972, so he is not eligible for a 1-year set-off.
I'll second.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, second by Ms. Rittenhouse. Agree, Mr. Quinones, Mr. Neal, Dr. Wright. Not a 1-year set-off. Parole type is a home arrest, absolute discharge of regular parole. Now, Mr. Stewart, let me just mark the reason for denial is that it was a serious and violent offense, a serious and indecent offense, trauma to the victim. I'm going to mark.
You say serious and violent offense, right?
Serious and violent offense, sir. Serious and deadly offense, trauma to the victim. Serious bodily injury to the victim, and she was sexually assaulted. So it wasn't on probation or at the time, but I'm going to. Is there anything else the board see that we may want to, as in recent disciplinary effects, we're supposed to supervise a lack of programming, it's done that. Okay, so Mr. Stewart, I'm going to mark on here your reasons for, the reasons for denial is that it was a serious and violent offense, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, and serious bodily injury to the victim as she was sexually assaulted. So the board has voted to deny your absolute discharge, regular parole, or home arrest. Did you hear the reason, sir?
Yes, serious violent offense. I read my heart already.
Okay. All right. Mr. Stewart, that's going to conclude your hearing at this time. I do want to thank you for taking the time and opportunity to appear before this board, sir. Could you put the CO3 on the line, sir?
Right, okay.